Well, hello, friends, and welcome to another edition of the Future Sox podcast. My name is Ian Eskridge. I am joined this evening by James Fox. How are you, James?
Hello, sir. How are you?
Oh,
yeah.
Two-sided question. On the major league side of things, I am hurting pretty badly. On the minor league side, though, things are looking fairly decent, and some guys are starting to show promise in things that we had hoped. So I guess that's as best as I could put it. You?
Yeah, I think there's enough decent performances. I think there's like enough guys where like it was pretty obvious that some of them would at least start well, right? There's just like so much decent pitching that there's like always something to follow or watch every day. So that's good. That's a big change.
So, obviously this being the Future Sox podcast, we focus on the minor league side of things, and we focus on the development side of things and who is moving up through the ranks. And, one of the things that we really try and focus on and try and figure out is how the White Sox developmental system is, because that seems to be a hot button issue. You know, if you go on social media, people always question the White Sox developmental system. So tonight we are lucky enough to be joined by a former White Sox prospect, Tyler Osik. Let's just go ahead and bring him in right now. T.O., how you doing?
Doing good. Thanks for having me. Thanks for all the support. Can you hear me?
Yep, we're good.
Thanks for all the support over the years from both of you guys, man. You guys do a great job covering this stuff, and you guys are passionate about it, and I could tell about that. So I really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. So you were obviously drafted by the White Sox. You know, what your journey was like through the developmental system and how things started for you when you were drafted by the White Sox?
Yeah, so I mean, when I was drafted by the White Sox, you know, I played the first half of my season in Arizona League in the rookie league, and started off a little slow. The first 50 at bats, second 50 at bats did pretty well. And then I skipped and went to low A Kannapolis and, and did a really good job there for the last half of the year, whatever, finished up the season first half good. And, you know, it was a good introduction to pro baseball my first year for sure. I really enjoyed my coaching staffs that I had on both teams. I enjoyed the training staff, strength and conditioning staffs. So I thought on those teams for the first year, I really enjoyed my time, and it was a good first taste of Pro Bowl.
So that seems to be like one of the things with White Sox fans as well as the training staffs. There's a lot of questions about physical conditioning and everything. You care to elaborate, because I know that you're really big into physical conditioning, and you lift a lot of weights and everything. You want to just give us a glimpse into the kind of work that they have you doing down there.
Yeah. So, I mean, throughout the organization, I do have to say, from the time that I got drafted to 2023 last spring training, when I got released, there has been a lot of changes on the, on the strength and conditioning and training sides of things. They've definitely gone more in depth into each specific player, trying to evaluate their movements and how they can improve each specific player more, opposed to maybe more cookie cutter plans in the beginning. And I actually think the strength and conditioning side and the training side does a really good job with the White Sox minor league player development. I really liked Goldie Simmons. I liked Gage, I think his name was. And then I also liked Juan Maldonado. We had a great bunch of trainers in strength and conditioning. So I thought they'd do a really good job on that side of things. I can't tell you why the problem transitions over into the major league side with all these injuries, because they're doing as much as they could on the training and development staff side of things, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like in the big leagues, it's like the same guys over and over again, right? So it's really hard. I think fans, right away, their first instinct is like blame the training staff, like fire them all. I have a tough time questioning like medical professionals, because I'm not one. So like when Luis Robert gets hurt for the fifth time, like running, like I don't know. I always tend to think that that's like something that he's not doing. I just like don't know. like whose fault that is, right? Like organizationally, like should that stuff be happening? Like I don't, you know, I don't really know.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's anything they're doing on the organizational side. Like my experience with Goldie Simmons, who I know is on the big league staff, was nothing but really good. He's really good at understanding as a player, right? Like when you need to maybe go hard that day in the weight room, or maybe when you've had a tough couple of days on the field and maybe you lay off a little bit. So him as a former player has really good feel on how to go about things like that. I think it's maybe more specific thing. Like you said, I think with Luis Robert, I think that might just be some freak stuff because he's super lean, super quick twitch. That might be some freak injury stuff. And I think with some of the other guys with the recurring stuff, it could be maybe something they're doing. You know what I mean?
Right. So, you know, like you and I have talked a lot about hitting and your struggles and your a lot of successes, right? So like when you entered the Sox system, I feel like there's, I don't know, like the outside view was that the White Sox would kind of draft players, let you guys do whatever you wanted, and then maybe like make adjustments like after that, right? And I think it's changed. I like talking to Andy Barquette last year. Obviously, he's no longer around. How much changed, like when you were in the system, like your first director of hitting guy, whatever, like through Andy and like you being released, I guess, like how much was there a lot of consistency or did it change like quite often? Like just like overall plans for you and for everybody else, basically.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's probably the tough thing, right? For some kids that maybe got drafted from 2017 to 2019, like the revolving door or changing of hitting philosophies or people that kept coming in and out. Right. I'd say I was most relevant and probably aligned most with Andy Barquette's hitting stuff because we have a prior connection from UCF and stuff like that. So I kind of already knew what Andy did, right? And that's kind of what I took into my own work. And I had similarities and I liked what he talked about when it came to hitting. And I think from the other previous hitting coordinators, I didn't get to speak much with about hitting. But I know that maybe for some of the younger guys that maybe need more direction, it's probably a little more difficult when you adjust to this and then they give you a completely different plan for the next year. And then the following year, it's another one. Right. So I think that could be pretty tough for a young kid who maybe doesn't have like I was fortunate to have a former major leaguer as a father. Right. So like I had that to fall back on and some advice to get from him. But for a guy who doesn't have that, I could see that being really difficult on how to maybe pivot back. So I think having a more consistent like foundation of maybe hitting minds that stay in the building for a long time can help the younger hitters in the organization develop.
Did you see any real changes in the way, you know, not even necessarily in the hitting side, but you know, even on the pitching side, when the regimes kind of changed in Chicago from Renteria to Tony La Russa, did you see like anything kind of change in the way that they kind of handled things, or was everything kind of, you know, all the same between the two?
I mean, there was some changes on the pitching side. I remember they were changing on where they wanted to throw the baseball, right? We were trying to throw baseballs in specific quadrants of the zones and really attack there analytically, right? And I just think that, you know, those were the changes that were made in the previous two years, I guess, when Tony La Russa, Ethan Katz was there. I think those were the changes. It was more attacking analytics and finding out what pitches work in certain zones and diving into that a little more, right? And trying to and go off of the analytics and game plan more. So that's a change that I saw.
Yeah, I mean, so like just like lots of regime change, right? So like for somebody like you, obviously like you're just grinding, right? To try to make it to the big leagues, right? But like big picture stuff, Chris Getz was technically in charge of the minor leagues, right? So like when you're a player, in this organization, right? Do you feel like Chris Getz is in charge of the minor leagues, or is it just really like convoluted where there's like other people above him making decisions too, and you don't really know who's making decisions all the time, to the point where you have to get tunnel vision and just like basically work on you like every day essentially?
Yeah, no, I think you definitely know that he runs the organization and he makes these decisions and all personnel calls come from him for sure. You definitely know that. I think that your best way to navigate the minor leagues is definitely to keep that tunnel vision and just focus on you and, you know, try and get as good as you can get, you know? And I think that's probably maybe one of the hardest things in the minor leagues if a career is not going the way that you hoped, you know what I mean? But I definitely think that he's the guy calling the shots and making the decisions on personnel and stuff like that.
So look, this might be unfair and I'm sorry, but like, you know, the people when he got hired that said, you know, that he doesn't deserve this job. You don't have to answer that part, but you know, because he was the farm director and he's to blame for like all the developmental failures, right? Is that sort of criticism fair?
I don't think that level of criticism is fair for Chris Getz at all. I you know, I'm not saying like, I think he's going to do a good job in Chicago as a general manager. You know, I just think that maybe if I from the outside looking in, like what advice I would give from a player that was in the organization for a long time is to maybe give more of your coaching staffs and people, you know, a little bit of what I'm trying to say is, you know, give them the reins to maybe give the organization some advice on player moves, on who should play at certain levels, how much playing time they should get. Because I just think, right, I don't think it's his fault by any means. I think it's whatever the scouting reports and the guys that they're choosing to bet on, it, like for the past few years has been incorrect, right? So like, I think if you could now tap into the coaches that are on the floor with the players and they're seeing these guys play every single day, right? I think then you could get a better feel of the players that you have within your organization, opposed to the guys and the roving scouts that come in and see you maybe twice in a full season. And they're going to go off of the prospect rankings and they're going to go off of who Baseball America says is good, and opposed to the coaching staff that's down in the trenches with you, right? Tap into those guys and maybe get their opinions on players a little more.
So if you were going to make some changes in the way that the White Sox developmental system operates, and I mean, keep in mind, obviously I realize that you're, you know, no longer there, but the way things work there, with the people that they hired, with the way that they run things, what kind of changes would you have made in that system?
Yeah, I would just flat out make it more performance-based from the top to bottom, right? Like, you know, the margins are so small for all professional baseball players that if you're not valuing performance or valuing the way that someone plays the game, and it just, you know, it can affect and create a bad culture in clubhouses, right? If you're not valuing performance and then people aren't hustling, they're not running out to their position and stuff, things along those lines, right? So, I mean, I would definitely value performance more and look for gamers and guys that could help provide and create winning players throughout the organization from top to bottom. If you perform, you play. If not, then it is what it is.
So I think like they've done that some, but you have to get like past double A, right? Like your Danny Mendix and your Zach Remillards and your guys like that, right? Like eventually they're at Charlotte and they have numbers. So it's like, oh, well, I guess we'll like call this guy up, right? But like if you're stuck in high A or whatever performing, and you've experienced this, right? Like you're 27, Tyler. I mean, right? You're a late day three guy, like, you know, low bonus guy. Like you have to rake, you know, and you have to like get to double A, right? Before you'd even like, hey, maybe this guy's pretty good. So like if you have prospects in front of you and you kind of stall out, like it's just like it's really, really tough.
For sure. And like that's kind of just what I was looking at, right? Like after I was looking back a little bit from like the 2017 to 2019 drafts, right? And you know, I was just thinking of guys like Alex Destino, Craig Dietolo, Luis Curbelo, Ian Dawkins. Like, I think, like, why are those guys not in Charlotte right now? Why are they not in Charlotte playing and getting at-bats opposed to signing people from outside of the organization? I would go more homegrown guys. And if you're going to give these depth at-bats and at-bats in Charlotte to people that you maybe need for major league depth, right, I think it should be more the homegrown guys that you drafted that have put up good numbers in the minor leagues, like those guys, you know?
Yeah, Destino and Didolo for sure. You know, like at least Didolo got some time in Charlotte. You know, but they mostly had him playing first base when he was there. So there was that. He was at least on the MLB Network game of the week or whatever when Charlotte was on there. So at least he got a little bit of run up there, but he did get let go as well. So
he did. Tyler, do you wish you would have moved to catcher sooner, or does it not really matter?
No, I definitely wish I would have sooner. Probably if I could go back, I wish I did in high school or college for sure. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that would have helped me for sure.
Because I just think the
missed year of COVID kind of definitely hurt, you know, with my development and not getting able to catch in the minor leagues, you know. So
yeah, well, I mean, it's just hard. Like I remember I wrote an article about you years ago, right? And you put up numbers and it is what it is, right? But man, if you play first, like, you know, you have to mash, right? And not that you didn't, you did, you hit really well, but I just feel like offensively you probably profiled a little bit better at catcher, right? So if that's where like all your time was invested sooner, maybe it, you know, I'm sure you don't want to rehash it. It probably goes through your mind every day, right? But I was just wondering, like, if, you know, had you done that sooner, like maybe it, I don't know, maybe it's a little bit different.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, you know, I wish I definitely got a, I think that's probably part of the reason, like my time in the minor leagues with the White Sox, I wanted to get to catch more often because I knew that, right? I was a bit of a tweener. I needed to catch and get more reps behind the plate to have a chance. You know, in the big leagues, you got to really slug to play a corner or first base or DH, you know? So, but yeah, no, afterwards, I wound up finding out the reasonings, part more of an in-depth reason why I didn't really get to catch was because, you know, after the COVID year happened and then, you know, they didn't really want to risk having a guy develop behind the plate at the same levels as guys that they signed for a big amount of money. You know what I mean? So they wanted to prioritize defense behind the plate, which I understand now, you know, just being removed from playing for a bit. You know, I can understand we can't have a guy developing at that position when we have three guys that we signed for a couple million dollars, you know.
Yeah. The thing that that got me at the time was that you had just come off of a season where you had had the batting title in the South Atlantic League. And then they send you to Birmingham. And, you know, it was like, it was a very short amount of time. It was a very short leash that they gave you in Birmingham before they, yes, they cut ties. That was the thing that got me. And, you know, like I understand the points of, you know, not wanting to possibly, you know, allow you to, you know, I guess, quote unquote, like learn on the job type thing in AA that I got. But like not keeping you around and giving you that time to kind of get your bearings in AA. That was the kind of the main thing that kind of got under my skin a little bit. And I'm sure it's probably the same, you know, feelings for you as well. So.
Yeah, no, I was definitely shocked as well. I thought that after that year that when I came back, I mean, I would probably let a guy just see what he can do for a full season before I cut ties with him at the next level, you know, just based off of what he's done previously.
Yeah.
So we
you got anything, James?
Yeah. So, you know, I kind of heard from a lot of people like when Chris Getz took over that players and staff were like excited, you know, not necessarily even that it's Getz, right? But that it's a former player like in charge of the organization. And I was taken aback a little bit, right? Because like Rick Hahn obviously like was not a former player, but Kenny was always around and he was technically like the highest ranking officer. So the perception that like now a baseball player is in charge, like that's better. Like whether or not that's true, whatever, I don't really care. But like if you're a player in the org, like how do you think that would make you feel? Like knowing like, okay, like the head of the org, whatever, like GM, president of baseball ops is like somebody that played and played fairly recently, you know, like do you think that's like something that's a positive?
I mean, you would expect it to be. For my experience, it didn't, you know, it didn't really relate to like, cause it just confused me if you're a former player, then why don't you value ball players and winners? You know what I mean? Like guys that can help win in your organization, you know, not every player is going to be an all-star at the major league level. So, you know, in my opinion, it's just like, if you're a former player and you're like, you know, don't sell out and then not help, not support former players or, you know, I know it's a hard job. It's definitely a hard job, but in my opinion, I just thought it would be different.
What are you doing now, Tyler?
So right now, I was coaching college baseball this fall. And then I stepped away from that and I'm probably going to go back and play this summer and try and learn catching a little more, see what happens for this summer in an independent league. Mm-hmm. And then see where it goes from there.
Yeah, I was going to ask, what kind of did you have like immediate options like after you were released in Chicago? Or
yeah, I had immediate options in a bunch of different independent leagues, and at the time I was just kind of, you know, I guess I would say bitter with how my experience went with minor league baseball, and then so I wasn't really ready to go back and play. But then, so I tried coaching and I actually enjoyed it a lot, but I just want to give it one more chance with playing and see what happens.
Okay. Yeah. Cause that was my only question. And I know like, you know, it's like personal, but like, you're definitely good enough to play for like those level of teams, right? Like a lot of the independent league teams that are even like in our area here, like, you know, you'd be like one of the better guys on some of those teams. So I was just curious, like if it's, you know, if you wanted to keep playing, like, you know, I was just wondering.
Yeah. No, I guess, yeah, we'll just see what happens. I'm going to play for the summer and see what happens.
So obviously other than the coaching thing and which university was that? I forget. It's in South Carolina, right?
Francis Mary University in South Carolina, yeah.
So other than that, you are also doing like private stuff online as well with individuals that contact you and stuff. My kid being one of them, I know that you've been in contact with him and talked to him about some stuff, which is awesome and much appreciated. Thank you very much. Yeah. But do you want to let people know, you know, what you got going on privately there? If that's something that you want to throw out there.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I'm doing remote training and baseball player development online. You know, I post baseball content consistently and, you know, I'm really passionate about hitting. So I'm trying to help the next generation of players with, you know, what I've learned along the way throughout the game and just doing whatever I can to share what I've learned and help the next generation. And I post on Twitter, Instagram and YouTube. It's called Hitters University and it's been going well so far.
You want to mention the other thing that you got going on right now?
Oh yeah, and I'm also expecting my first child next week. Actually, well. Yeah. Awesome. Oh, what was the other thing?
I was talking about the book, but if you want to throw that out there, that's fine too, because that's much bigger.
Yeah, no, that's hilarious. Yeah, but yeah, no, I'm also releasing an ebook as well that is about hitting as well.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for hanging out with us and, you know, kind of giving us a little peek back there behind the curtain because, you know, like we get mixed information, obviously, from different sources. So it's nice to hear it from somebody that's, you know, recently been in it. So thank you so much.
Oh, for sure. Thanks for having me, guys.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thanks, Tyler. Appreciate it. And we will talk soon. Thank you so much for hopping on.
Yep, no problem. We'll see you later.
All right, take care. Bye. All right. Will, hi, James.
What's up?
We're back.
I always like that guy.
Yeah, absolutely. He's, I mean, he's always very forthcoming and very honest about things, which is really awesome. Something that you don't normally see.
Well, it's really obvious. Like, and it was really tough, like in 2020, obviously. But guys like him. Like, you know, it's area scouts, like you get a guy, right? And his area scout liked him and they drafted him and he was good in the lower levels. But like I brought up, right, he is a little bit of a tweener. So like playing first base is really hard, like if you don't mash, and he always hit like crazy. But yeah, it's really difficult. And the thing really hits home that he said, like the organization starts to prioritize certain guys, right? Guys that have bigger bonuses or guys that you're more invested in. Like those are the guys that, you know, are going to see time unless you're just like at a position of weakness, right? Like we're seeing it right now. Like Danny Mendick just got called up to the White Sox and Danny Mendick was a 22nd round pick. He was an afterthought. Nobody thought he was anything. He just kept hitting and hitting and hitting. And eventually he hit enough at Charlotte to like get a chance on the White Sox, and then, you know, carved out like a little bit of a career as a 40 man guy for himself. So that's what it takes. But sometimes it's luck. Sometimes you got to be at a position where your org doesn't have prospects.
Yeah. So I just wanted to throw this out there. The team, so he just hit 5 home runs in a row, 5 days in a row, against the Mets AAA system. Now, obviously, that is the team that he was on last year. How much of that fueled what just happened this last week, whether it be knowledge or whether it just be absolute and utter hate for the Mets?
Well, but the thing that's weird about it is, like, when he, you know, died in left field a couple of years ago.
Adam Haseley, thank you very
much. Yeah, Adam Haseley ran into him. I think he had like a 125 WRC plus at the time. Like Mendick looked like, at minimum, like a guy that could play multiple spots against left-handed pitching. Like he looked like he was going to stick around and be like a decent option. There was a period of time where, I guess we could say that it's still like this, right? Where it's been a revolving door in right field for the White Sox, where he was the best candidate to play right field against left-handed pitching. Like just because he was like one of their best 9. Yeah, I mean, he could stick around. I don't know what happened last year. I mean, I know he had his typical AAA number. Yeah, like he had his typical AAA numbers, but he didn't really make a dent with the Mets. I mean, here's your runway, sir, on the 3-18 Chicago White Sox. So go get him in Minnesota, pal.
Yeah, so this is what we didn't want to talk about, and Drew Bogues basically begged us not to talk about the 3-18 White Sox. Lenin Sosa has been optioned down to AAA. So as you mentioned earlier, off stream, James, that does require a 40-man spot, whether that be Luis Robert to the 60-man or 60-day rather. They have to find a spot for him to clear 40-man space. So
yeah, that seems like the most obvious move right now. But who? I mean, they didn't DFA Lenin Sosa; they just optioned him. So, I mean, that's a potential move, probably. But I feel like that would have, if they were going to do that, they would have just done it. So, yeah, they'll have to find a spot for Mendick. And we'll see. I mean, I think Tommy Pham, like, he has to be on the team by Wednesday or Thursday, I believe. So there's going to be a couple of roster moves this week. He's an easy swap out for Kevin Pillar, I think. But why the hell are we talking about this? We have like other stuff we can do.
I mean, you know, I'm just, you know, it's kind of one of those things that's it's happening, and it involves, you know, our guys down in the minors. So it's just kind of one of those things I wanted to bring up, at least that part. I mean, we don't have to go in depth on why this White Sox team is absolutely terrible. But something that we talked about off stream was that how bad Lenin Sosa has looked at the major league level, and just how that is like not necessarily a mirror opposite of what he does when he's in the minor leagues.
Yeah.
But really looks like he's pushing like really hard. He's putting a ton of pressure on himself, and he's making some bad decisions. That rundown was absolutely brutal.
He looks terrible in the big leagues. And I've like been a fan, obviously. Like, look, when guys put up the numbers that he put up in AA Birmingham in the Southern League, like, I take notice, because that's usually where, you know, White Sox non-prospects go to die, essentially. And he went there and was great. And he hit in Charlotte. I'm the dumbass that put Marcus Semien comps on him, so you know, like I'll have to own that, I guess. Like,
I didn't do that.
No. Well, I just said like they were like their numbers were very similar in the minors, like in their, you know, but yeah, he's just I don't know. Like, so these players go to Chicago and get dumber somehow. Cause even like we talked on previous episodes about Oscar Colas, right? And he's not a great outfielder, but he's like, he doesn't play like an absolute moron, like in the minors. Like, I don't understand like what happens to these guys, like when they get up there.
Yeah. It kind of makes you wonder that this year they hired the mental skills coach, that maybe they might have figured out that, hey, when these guys come up here, they're trying very much to impress people, and that is part of the problem. And that's what's going on here. Because, yeah. I mean, it's like most of these guys are, you know, I mean, not that they're necessarily there to be saviors per se, but, you know, like an Oscar Colas, you know, him getting the right field position on opening day, pretty much with, you know, very minimal effort, being just handed the job. He's just expecting to come up and be a superstar because that's what people have been telling him for his entire life. That's what he is. So when he gets there and it doesn't work, he tries to do more and more and ends up putting himself in worse and worse positions.
Yeah, and I never know, like, whether it's part of the deal with some of these guys, right? Like, you get to the front of the line on an Oscar Colas for $2.7 million because you make whatever promises you make, right? Like, if you perform, we're going to get you to the big leagues in a year and a half type stuff, right? I mean, we just saw the weird contract with Yossi Marcuzin, and he's back in Birmingham now after clearing waivers. So that whole thing was strange. I just think sometimes with some of these international signing stuff like that happens, and, you know, he should have never been plan A in right field last year. He was, because for a lot of different reasons, right? They didn't have any money to spend and they decided to spend it in other spots and go with him. And it was, you know, short-sighted, and it, you know, was very reminiscent of other decisions that they had made. So, but I do think like we should see him again pretty soon though, over like what we're currently seeing. I mean, you know, would you rather give him the at-bats against right-handed pitching right now in right field, or give him to Robbie Grossman? I mean, it doesn't really make any sense, right? I'd like to see Colas back at some point.
I mean, you know, judging by past experience, you know, I don't know is that either one of them is necessarily going to get the ball to the cutoff man, because Grossman bounces it into him and Oscar Colas usually overthrows him. So, I mean, it's lesser two evils, I suppose.
What are some of your favorite things that are happening down on the farm? Because it's not like, look, I don't know. I feel like I remain more optimistic than most White Sox fans right now, because like I'm digging into the minor league team and not watching the big league team that much. Full disclosure here. But no, I think there's like pretty good stuff going on, and that doesn't mean that like everything's going to work. It doesn't mean they have the number three ranked system in baseball either, by the way. My goodness gracious. but it's better. Like, we talked to Jim Callis. It's like a middle of the pack farm system. Like, you and I talked, you know, before the stream, like about Caro, like what Caro is doing is impressive. I think they could have between four and six top 100 prospects on pretty much any publication right now. Like, they're in decent shape, and they, you know, they got a lot of money to spend in this draft in July. So, you know, not everything is terrible, but it's tough to hear when your big league team's going to win like 45 games. So,
man, at this point, I don't even know that I would be confident in saying that they're even going to win 45. It's that bad. I mean, they have just been absolutely brutal. I'm going to go ahead and bring up something here that I am very excited about. It's something that happened today.
Juan Setz delivers. Swing. Oh, fly ball.
I guess we'll start that over again.
Fly ball. Right field deep. Beckles Parker, and it is gone. Walk it off. Gonzo Caro, walk off Birmingham. So a three-run shot, and the Barons win it in the
Gatorade
bottom of the seventh inning. Alan and I will be back with final details.
So before, in mid last year, when he was an Angels prospect, Edgar Caro was being written off by guys left and right because his power didn't quote unquote translate to Double A from Low A, and when he got traded to the White Sox, there was an uptick in power. Now he's, you know, as you tweeted earlier today, the Southern League, he leads in OPS, home runs,
RBIs and slugging. Yeah.
There you go. So that is a huge and exciting development.
Yeah, he's good. I mean, like Rick Hahn and Kenny failed, like, but they made good deadline trades last year. Like, they did. They really did. Like, Edgar Caro at midseason, like if this continues, obviously is a top 100 prospect everywhere. He was when the White Sox traded for him, and then he fell off some lists because there were some questions like about the power. And but like he mashed at low A as a 19-year-old, and then Artie Moreno like made the foolish decision to like skip high A and send him to double. And then the White Sox kept him in double, which was a little questionable too. But he should stay. He should stay there now too. Like he can go to Charlotte at some point, right? But, yeah, it's very, very, very good so far. What about like I saw somebody ask the Future Sox Twitter account how he was catching.
Yeah,
I think reports there are fine, right? Like nobody's saying he's a Gold Glover behind the plate, but it's not like he has to move to first. Like he's a definite catcher, and he hits from both sides, and he's on pace for about 25 homers, and his on base percentage is over .400. So yeah, really exciting so far.
Yeah. I would say his defense has improved a little bit, since last year. But you know, by no means is he a finished product at this point. You know, it's kind of one of those things that he's going to continue to improve. And as he ages, he should get better, and eventually he'll end up like Martin Maldonado. Sorry. I see no reason. He's definitely going to stick a catcher. There's no way they're going to pull him out of that. He's looked fantastic. And the thing is that they've got him catching, a lot of their top prospects when it comes to pitching, which actually Drew Bogues asked us a question here, and I'm going to go ahead and bring this up. He says, who is the next Nick Nastrini or Jonathan Cannon players who have been long minor leaguers to make their debut this season? Your thoughts?
I don't know. Do we see Drew Thorpe this year? He's not a long minor leaguer. He's only been in the league for 2 years.
Yeah, I think that's kind
of. I think there's plenty of relievers that could get a chance, could get a shot. How about this name? How about Addison Coffey making his big league debut this year for the White Sox?
He's looked really good this year. Last year, he started off great. And it looked like he hit a brick wall in like September. And for whatever reason, he had pitched the most innings he had ever pitched in his entire life. The White Sox, in their infinite wisdom, decided to send him to the Arizona Fall League after he was already like 20 innings past his highest, you know, innings pitched in his entire life. And he stumbled. Shocking absolutely no one except for apparently the people in the front office of the White Sox. But this year he's come out and he's looked absolutely fantastic. I don't have his numbers in front of me, but, he took over for Eater today and pitched, 1 1/3, I think. And it was scoreless. He didn't have any strikeouts, but I don't think he gave up any hits either. He's been pretty good this year. I wouldn't be surprised to see him. I wouldn't be surprised to see, Caleb Freeman or, Frazier Ellard possibly, from the relievers in the minors. I don't know if Lane Ramsey is going to get another bite at the apple.
Yeah.
We'll have to see. That's going to be an interesting one, whether they let him get it.
I mean, I do think we're going to see a lot of bullpen guys just because like two of these guys might not bring a ton back, but like after the trade deadline, I would be stunned if John Brebbia or Steven Wilson are still on the White Sox, right? I mean, if you can get any, you know, they'll trade those guys. They would trade Tanner Banks, probably. I think Michael Kopech probably goes. So, look, if you have, like, a ton of prospects in your bullpen to close out the year, I wouldn't be surprised. The other guy, like, obviously acquired an offseason deal, Prelander Baroa, has looked better, finally, than he against Norfolk. I think we're, I mean, as far as the starting rotation goes, I mean, you got your two guys there that are in the rotation right now. I think Davis Martin will be there like eventually, like whenever he's healthy. But as far as like your guys in double, I don't know if we see any of those guys like for a while. I mean, obviously Eater, Thorpe, and Uriarte are all on the 40 man. But I do think they're going to be pretty patient with those guys. And then Kai Bush is like not on the 40. But he's had a pretty good start too. And then one of your favorites, Mason Adams, still just a guy that just performs, man. And like, you know, it's not that he has no stuff, like his stuff's pretty good. It's a little bit like underrated. I mean, he kind of reminds me a little bit of Davis Martin, but he was way better, way quicker. Like Davis Martin took a little bit longer.
Yeah, I'd say probably like the thing with Mason Adams is one way that I generally describe him is elite tunneling. And actually, Kurt Bloom talked about it today, is that every pitch that he throws is coming out of the exact same spot that the last pitch came from. And the movement profile on it is completely different. And that's one of the things that really makes him very successful is that, A, his command's really good, but B, it's always coming out of the exact same spot, and you don't know where it's going to go, which is awesome.
But yeah.
2024, I don't know. That's a little quick, probably.
Probably. But I mean, he's a guy that I wouldn't worry about pitching in Charlotte. Like I think he would just be the same there. Like he, you know, pretty good. I know I saw that one. We can answer that one. But yeah, like one underrated thing I think with the White Sox the past couple of years with Mike Shirley's drafts, day three, pretty good. I feel like a lot of people don't follow day three. It's a really good time to, like, you know, draft guys that are good enough to go in rounds like 5, 6, 7, 8. You can kind of play with the money a little bit. There's a lot of names, like just off the top of my head, Mason Adams, I think, is going to pitch in the big leagues. Brooks Baldwin will play in the big leagues. I think Terrell Tatum and Jacob Burke both have a chance to play in the big leagues. Those guys are all day three, like, signings, right? Like, I know Tim Elko
was day two.
Yeah, he went in the 10th round. Right, yeah, okay. He went in the 10th round. But, I mean, yeah, like, there's just, like, a whole bunch of guys in 11, 12. They took some upside swings last year. Like, we're going to hear about Mathias Lacombe. He's really far away, but, you know, that's a guy who's, like, going to be one of their top pitchers in rookie ball. Who knows with, like, Riku Nishida, right? But, I mean, that's a guy that's just going to move through the system and play wacky ball, you know? So day three, the White Sox have made some pretty interesting selections.
Yeah, that was the thing. I tweeted about Riku Nishida earlier, like, I don't know, a day or two ago. And the thing is that nothing that, like, 80% of what that guy does doesn't end up on a box score.
No.
So
he's like one for five with 14 total bases somehow.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's like you have no way to quantify what he does because none of it counts towards a box score, but he's always on base and he's, you know, always just creating havoc. It makes absolutely no sense.
My favorite thing of the year so far is the other day when he just, like, kept running to third. It was like Little League where you just, like, keep running.
Sammy Zavala did that earlier today on a DJ Gladney walked and he took second and he just kept on going straight to third. It was awesome.
Like bunt and end up on third because the defense is so bad. Like, yeah, he's treating it like Little League. You can, this question from Blank Name, you can answer this one if you want. I think it's tough, man.
Yeah, this is a tough one because I think that you have to clarify how they're going to pitch in the majors, because I would say probably with the way that they've looked, like if I was to take a small sample size of just what they've looked like on the White Sox, I would say that Bush is more likely to be a starter and Eater is more likely to be a reliever. Just simply because Bush's stuff is fine. It's not bad. It's pretty good. But he's more consistent as opposed to Eater, where you can run into a section of like four or five batters where it just looks like he's completely lost his slot and has no idea where it's going. Now, does that mean that he's not going to figure that out and end up, you know, where he's back to that, you know, area where he was like one of the top left-handed pitchers in minor league baseball? I mean, it's possible. From what we've seen in his time with the White Sox, it hasn't happened yet, but that's kind of what I'd say.
Yeah. I mean, Kai Bush is definitely like the safer bet because I think he's going to start big league games, but he's probably a number five, like back end lefty type guy. Whereas like, even if Eater struggles, like you could very quickly make the transition to making him like a high leverage left-handed monster if you want to. And obviously that's like not the plan. That's not what they want. They want him to be a starter because he can be a number two starter. He can. but you could always just like, there's reliever upside there. If you just decide like, okay, this guy can't handle this load, just go throw 100 with a, you know, nasty slider basically.
So Michael Kopech plan.
Pretty much. Yeah. I think they're going to give him a little bit more rope than that. I mean, look, even today, like umpiring in the Southern League hasn't been great. It's four walks today, but it is 8 Ks. His stuff looked pretty good. He just racks up so many pitches. He only goes like 4 2/3 most of the time. But I mean, the stuff's still really good. Like I completely understand like why they made that trade. He just eventually needs to stop walking people and go deeper in games.
Yeah, 100%. That's the problem. You know, is that when he doesn't walk guys, you know, he's still, you know, he still ends up going into deep counts. He's just not walking them. You know, that's like been the thing is that, and ultimately it's the thing that's frustrating, because when you watch the games and you see what his stuff looks like, the fact that he does walk guys or that he goes deep into counts, it's even more frustrating, you know? I don't know. We'll see what happens with him. That said, I'm just going to throw this out there. The Kannapolis Cannonballers Myrtle Beach Pelicans series this week, the home plate umpires for this series have been the worst I think I've ever seen. And it's, you know, every night it's a different guy from the crew, and every night it's brutal. It's been awful. I just wanted to throw it out there. We don't have to talk about it. I'm just wanted to mention it because it was terrible to watch.
Yeah, what was the best pitching performance down there? Was it Bautista or Keener? That rotation in Canny's pretty good. And obviously, like we've kind of talked about Lucas Gordon and what he might be ultimately, but I mean, Keener,
you guys,
yeah, like, but Keener and Bautista both look pretty good.
Yeah, I would say it was probably Bautista because I think he walked less guys. But I do think that he ended up going less in the game than Keener did, I think.
Yeah.
But he looked pretty good.
Aldrin Bautista led the Arizona League in strikeouts last year before the White Sox acquired him. I mean, he's a real dude, just really young.
Yeah. The stuff is real for sure. And he got screwed on some pretty rough calls. It was like they went from like a cake plate strike zone in innings 1 and 2 to like innings 3 and 4, they widened it up, you know, a little bit, and it was pretty aggravating. Speaking of White Sox personnel decisions, we had this talk the other day about the undrafted free agents and how I felt like the White Sox are doing a much, much better job with the amateur scouting area of things. When you look at the relievers that they've got in Kannapolis, like a Bryce Collins, McLaughlin. Actually McLaughlin was drafted, but I mean, there's been a bunch of guys in Kannapolis and, in Winston and even with Birmingham that have been guys that they've been bringing in that have been nice contributors, which is something that I'm not used to seeing, you know?
Well, and even starting, like Bokenstedt starting for Kannapolis, right?
Bokenstedt.
And that and he could easily get forced out of one of these rotations at some point and into a bullpen too. I mean, it's a pretty good arm for whatever they signed. You know, they probably signed him for nothing, so.
Yeah, actually, I think that they were talking about this also as well on the Barons broadcast today, about just how the drafting situation has changed, you know, with them making the draft smaller. You're finding these guys that are undrafted guys that are just, you know, like Shane Murphy, you know, undrafted. And last year with Kannapolis, he was fantastic out of Grand Canyon University. You know, just guys like this that are getting signed that aren't getting drafted and they're just popping up and putting in performances and looking halfway decent. So interesting stuff.
Well, and you can still sign them all for $150K like after the draft, and it doesn't count against your pool at all. So, I mean, that's, you know, that's, decent amount.
You know, which is a very odd thing, because I was actually talking to a friend of mine about this today. You know, you've got these seniors that are getting drafted in the very last round, and they're getting like $1,000 to sign. Yet these undrafted free agents are getting, you know, some, like you said, $150K.
Yep.
It's bizarre, you know?
Yeah, and like, it's usually like older seniors that have no leverage at all. Like even like a Tim Elko signed for $35,000, like in the 10th round, because he went back to Ole Miss. And the thing is, like, he can take $35,000 and tell his relatives that he was a 10th round pick, or he can take his chances and free agency. And I don't, you know what I mean? So these guys just like don't have that much leverage. So yeah, it's kind of brutal, but that, you know, we'll talk more about that, like as we get closer to the draft, and how like you have to sign your top 10 guys to keep all the money. So teams typically do this, you know. I mean, there's another guy like what in the bullpen, wasn't Zach Franklin out of Missouri, was like a 10th rounder that signed for very little as a senior, and he's pitching like out of one of the affiliate bullpens right now too.
Yeah, he ended up, he lost the game today in Bowling Green on the dash. Yeah, he had a rough.
Garrett Wright's an interesting guy. Like you can just find these relievers really that throw really hard and just, you know.
Garrett Wright has looked great with Kannapolis. There's been so many of these bullpen arms that are just, you know, it's kind of like some of them. I'm wondering, you know, if they end up, you know, this is exactly how Mason Adams started last year, you know, where he was a long relief guy for the Cannonballers. Even before Noah Schultz showed up, he was doing middle relief. So I wouldn't be surprised if we ended up seeing some of these guys kind of transition into a starting role at some point with Kannapolis. And maybe they're guys that the White Sox see starting, kind of like how they did with Keener, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Any thoughts on Noah Schultz this weekend? He went 4 again, I think. That'll ramp up at some point, I'm pretty sure. I mean, even when he's wild or gives up some contact, like most guys just can't hit that kid. So,
yeah, no, the first thing started off a little rough. He walked the first two guys that he saw. And then I believe that there was a double to the left field, and both of those guys scored. But then after that, it was like light switch flipped, and then it was game over. You know, at least while he was in the game anyway.
Yeah. So I've also been
stuff.
I've been seeing some of the video, some photos that we've shared, like from Arizona. Obviously, there's a couple of weird veterans there, right? And Mike Clevenger and Tommy Pham, but the rookie ball team's getting going, you know, highlighted by George Wolkow and some of your high profile signings last year, Javier Mogollon. It seems like Ryan Burroughs is in action. So my guess is like he'll be in canny, but he's like rehabbing some sort of hand injury. There's a lot of pitching there. So that season starts May 4th. The DSL season, I think, still starts later, like in June, but you know, both of the rookie affiliates will get going here pretty soon. And it's not really easy to get prospects, but I know some people in Arizona, so we'll see, you know, some of these teams. But George Wolkow looks like massive, like, and he's playing center field for that team. So that'll be interesting.
Yeah, that dude's, he's real big.
It's like a Joey Gallo toolkit.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, he's the thing is that he's not like he just looks like he's kind of just like you know, like the how they say the Under Armour model thing, you know. He's like he's not like, you know, big and huge, you know. He's streamlined, but like the dude is definitely jacked. I'm looking forward to seeing some video of him. We'll see what we get.
Javier Mogollon's the opposite, by the way.
That picture of him jumping to high five George Wolkow is one of the funniest pictures in the White Sox minor leagues at this point that I've seen. So
other than that, I mean, you know, the Dylan Cease trade return, as far as like on the pitching front, looks pretty good so far. Drew Thorpe has had no trouble in the Southern League, which, you know, is interesting. I don't know whether they, you know, with Cannon and Estrini and Charlotte, do you think, or with them in Chicago, Do you think you see any of the Birmingham starters go to the Knights this week? I don't know. I haven't heard anything, but I don't know. It seems like there's some spots unless Clevenger and Keller are just going to go every 5 days for the Knights. I don't really know.
Yeah, I had somebody ask me the same question, and I was kind of – I don't know if they're ready to bump these guys up to AAA just yet. I kind of think that we're looking at like late May, early June is my guess. And it also kind of matters. I mean, not that we're expecting anything from the big league club at all, but I think that it matters like how much of the roster of the Knights gets pilfered to fill whatever nonsense injuries they have going on in with this team. That's absolutely hopeless. You know?
Yeah, for sure. And you will have like Davis Martin back at some point. And then my guess is Thorpe and Kai Bush are probably the first two to Charlotte, I would imagine. You know, Iriarte can stay in double, and you know, I don't know, you know, Eater, whatever. I don't know what their plan is really with Eater, but I would think Mason Adams will stay in double, and you know, so yeah, pretty interesting.
Yeah, I would think that they'd probably hold off on Mason Adams and probably move him to AAA first before, you know, like, I don't think that would be a jump that he would make from Atlanta straight to Chicago.
Well, I'm curious how aggressive they want to be. Like, if guys are performing in rookie ball, if they want to get him to Canny, because like, I mean, Lucas Gordon and Keener really don't need to be in Canny that long, but there's just not spots like in rotations for them.
Yeah. I'd say that they're probably suffering more than they're progressing in Kannapolis, because they have to deal with the defense in Kannapolis, which is A-ball defense is famously not very great. And also, you know, the level of competition isn't as good as it should be. And third off, the home plate umpires are brutal as well. And it could only help for them to face somebody that or pitch, you know, and have somebody watching at home plate that actually has an idea of what they're doing. So,
yeah. And those are two guys that pitched in what, like the Big 12 and the ACC respectively, you know? So
yeah. And the one in the Big 12 was the pitcher of the year,
right?
Texas exactly. In the Big 12. So, I mean, clearly he knows what he's doing. It's just going to be a matter of him getting comfortable and getting his innings in and whatever.
And Keener's pretty advanced, but he did pitch out of the bullpen for Wake Forest, so he just really needs innings. I guess the last thing to touch on, Jonathan Cannon, pretty cool story. I remember Jim Callis came on with me and Mike, I think, after that draft, and he predicted, and he's a Georgia guy, obviously, right? But he predicted Jonathan Cannon could be the first pitcher to the big leagues from that class. I think he is.
He is, yep.
Yeah.
He's the first one.
Well, there's not an angel.
Non-angel.
Non-angel. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I figured there was an angel. So yeah, I mean, Jonathan Cannon kind of is what he is. Like, this is what he's going to be. So it didn't really seem like much minor league time. I know I gave you a project last week of going through White Sox third rounders. It's not out of the question that Jonathan Cannon could be one of the better White Sox third rounders in team history if he's like decent at all. So, and he should get some runway to pitch here. Cause why not?
Yeah. I think the best ones that I found was, John Vukovic and,
Addison Reed, a third rounder.
Addison Reed was a third rounder. And then, the guy that was on the Mariners, JJ Putz.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, I mean, yeah, it's not good.
It's not Luis Gonzalez. No.
No. I mean, Luis Gonzalez, like, made it at least he played, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, there was probably like a dozen or so of them that had put in like significant major league time. And by significant, I mean more than like five at bats.
Other recent ones were Connor Pilkington went in the third. Andrew Dahlquist is still in the system. He went in the third. So.
Yeah. Yeah, he could. I mean, I have a lot more confidence in Jonathan Cannon being the best one out of all of them than any of the other ones that we've had. So, I did think that Connor Pilkington was fairly decent, but it's like as soon as he got brought up for the Guardians, it was just like, ugh. So, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, there's this as well. JJ yep. Putz eventually did end back up on the white side.
So. Kenny always gets his man.
It's true. He's like, oh, I like that guy so much that I drafted him. We had to trade him away for a very important, some important deal, or we had to let him go.
He probably saw him pitch one time in a tournament and instructed his scouting staff to take him.
Sounds fairly accurate, unfortunately. you got anything else for this week?
I don't think so. We did this whole thing and didn't really talk about the godforsaken big league team, so I'm pretty happy with it. Our performance tonight, at least.
Yeah, I mean, we have to put in significant effort to not go down that death spiral.
And I know this doesn't directly impact you, but the next time I do this, Caleb Williams will be the quarterback of the Bears, so that's good.
Yeah, probably, unless he gets hit by a bus. So, futuresox.net, you can find all of our written content. You can also find this in podcast form over there on our listener, the podcast player on there. There's a Patreon link on there, which you can support us. I am Ian Eskridge at Daily White Sox. He is James Fox at James Fox 917. We are Future Sox on Twitter. If you are not watching this on YouTube or Twitch, know that on Sunday nights at 8 o'clock, you can find us on YouTube or said Twitch channel, twitch.tv/FutureSox. And we thank you guys so much for your time. Thank you for coming and hanging out and listening. And thank our guest, Tyler Osick. You can find him at Tyler Osick on Twitter. Thank you so much for your time, guys. Have a great night, and we will talk to you guys next week, next Sunday at